The MarTech Podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com.
From advertising to software as a service to data.
Across all of our programs and clients, we've seen a 55 to 65% open rate.
Getting brands authentically integrated into content performs better than TV advertising.
Typical lifespan of an article is about 24 to 36 hours.
If we're reaching out to the right person with the right message and a clear call to action, then it's just a matter of timing.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. In this podcast, you'll hear the stories of world-class marketers that use technology to drive business results and achieve career success. Here's the host of the MarTech Podcast, Benjamin Shapiro.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast. I'm your host, Benjamin Shapiro, and today we're going to discuss global partnership strategies. Joining us is Paul Rupert, who is the founder of Global Point View Limited, which is a strategy and solutions consultancy focused on market entry, revenue growth, product innovation, digital engagement, acquisition thesis, corporate alignment, and integration planning. And today, Paul and I are going to discuss game-changing global partnerships for startups. All right, here's the first part of my conversation with Paul Rupert, the founder of Global Point View Limited. Paul, welcome to the MarTech Podcast.
Hey, Benjamin. Great to be here, and thank you for the opportunity to talk to your listeners today.
Excited to have you here. Excited to talk a little bit about partnerships, business development, startup growth strategies, all the good things. You know, in a previous life, I worked for eBay. It was really my first career move. The first thing that wasn't just a job, but the start of a career. And I was on the business development team focused on global strategies and partnerships. It feels like it's been forever. In reality, it was probably, I don't know, 15 or so years since I was doing that. But you have carved out a niche doing consultancy for startups, helping them figuring out not only partnerships, but market entry and growth. Boy, do I need your help. I was telling you before I pressed the recording button how my core products have changed. I started the MarTech Podcast to promote my consulting practice. Then it grew up and it kind of became a media business. And now we've taken the infrastructure we've developed for the MarTech Podcast and we're offering it to other brands to help them create their own startups. But man, do I stink right now at a go-to-market strategy? And, you know, I guess I could, even though we're like 7 years old, would consider us a little bit of a startup. Let's talk through it. How do you think about partnerships for startups? What's some of the ways that we can hit the ground running and start to get the word out?
Well, I think it's critical and essential at the beginning. I'm quite biased because of my own experience. I helped take a startup very similar to what you were talking about earlier, but it was in the mobile telecommunications services industry, essentially how two mobile network operators interoperate and be able to send not only voice telephony, as it's called, but also text messages between the two. And we got into the space very early on, and I was recruited specifically to take the opportunity global from the start. So I often talk about going global from the start is essentially an essential element, regardless of whether you might be selling fiber, food, fighters, or high technology coming out of Silicon Valley. How to be able to do that comes into a number of different factors. Obviously, what is it that you are offering, whether it's technology or these other elements, as I mentioned, products and services, and then start looking at probably comparables, which is essentially what I did. I was involved in a company that, as I mentioned earlier, allowed and enabled text messaging to go from what's called the native GSM radio format. In layman's terms, let's say that's like T-Mobile US, to a non-GSM radio format operator, which would be like CDMA or TDMA, and those old enough who might remember Nextel or Sprint or Verizon. And we came up with technology that allowed you to send these types of text messages. And we're talking about something that was going on in 2001, 2002 timeframe. I was able to convince the board as well as the executive team that there was going to be an opportunity that was bigger than the domestic U.S. market, which they had been focused on. I did that successfully convincing them. So I was brought in to essentially build out the opportunity from scratch. 5 years later, we sold the company for $427 million with $120 million in revenues. And of that $120 million, I was responsible for about $65 million of it in terms of the annual revenues. So that's my bias, and that's the experience that I leverage in terms of being able to go to my clients and be able to provide them with that insight. Now, how to be able to accomplish that, there are a number of different elements that I always considered.
So you've got some great experience growing startups and also working for big enterprises that have billions of dollars of capital and high aspirations. Talk to me about some of the strategies that you've learned from the biggest companies that can be implemented to startups to help them grow.
Essentially, it's the same game, if you will. You may not believe that, but the reality is that you approach the problem and approach the opportunity in the same way. What are the comparables? And even in a large entity, as I mentioned earlier, my earlier career, I was my first career in telecoms. In the 1990s, I helped launch one of the first GSM operators in North America, which meant that we had to go off, and there's actually an individual who does these kind of things called an international roaming director. And in that context, I was going abroad, having meetings, and essentially establishing partnerships with all the other mobile network operators around the world. If they didn't have that kind of a relationship with us, they wouldn't have their subscribers be able to get off a plane in San Francisco, for example, or my subscribers be able to get off a plane, let's say in London, and make sure that A, the phone worked, B, they were receiving messages, and most importantly, that there was going to be a back office operation relative to clearing. And the clearing means that both operators were getting paid for that mutual share of their network. But in the same regard, as I say, look at those paths that you might be able to follow and apply to the value proposition that you and your company bring to the table. And part of that includes identifying and building strategic partnerships, understanding how you can leverage technology. There are some out there today who might be saying, well, there's so much digitalization in the marketplace that you really don't have to worry about much upfront investigation. You can look at who's looking at your website and doing that kind of data analysis. I think that only gives you part of the picture, and you've got to be able to have an understanding of how do you leverage the other aspects of it. Again, in my case, we were looking at where were the greatest amount of traffic between North America, specifically the United States, and other countries around the world relative to telephony, meaning voice traffic. And why were we doing that? Because we figured the messaging traffic was going to mirror and emulate that voice traffic paths. And that's exactly what we did. But along the way, we also recognized research that showed, for example, that I was doing, looking at other markets around the world. I looked at Asia primarily because the markets were so large, specifically in China. But then I discovered that in the Philippines, their use of messaging, even in the early 2000s, was way off the charts compared to other countries around the world. Then I did some cross-reference research, which is the same kind of stuff that you might be doing as you look at your own value proposition and how you take that cross-border first and hopefully global later. We discovered that the fourth most often second language spoken at home in the United States is Tagalog, which is the language spoken in the Philippines. Now, there's a whole bunch of explanations as to why that is. At one point, it was a territory of the United States, but because of the economy in the Philippines with foreign workers working all around the world, as well as the large immigrant population in the United States, there was a huge amount of messaging that was going on between the U.S. and the Philippines. So that became a target number three after looking at France and looking at the UK and then realizing, okay, I got to get to Manila as fast as possible and start looking for those types of local partnerships with those mobile network operators over there. And ironically, we also looked at opportunities to at least forge a relationship and frame a relationship with our competitors in other parts of the world. That became important because 2 years down the road, we then started acquiring some of those competitors. So all this was planned out as to where are the paths that we can pursue, what can we leverage both in technology as well as the capability and even competitors' context in terms of understanding how we might be able to work together and understanding that we also might be working against each other in the marketplace. That's also part of the technical elements of what I was pursuing at the time, because in network telecommunications, you are constantly creating allies with your adversaries just to be able to trade traffic.
Time for a one-minute break to hear from our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. In 1919, John Wanamaker said, "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half." Well, the advertising landscape has changed since then, and instead of reaching your audience on two channels, you're probably reaching them on 20. Turns out John didn't know how easy he had it. But that doesn't mean that you should give up on striving towards marketing effectiveness. No matter how complex your marketing strategy is, Mutinex Growth OX is the market mix modeling platform that measures the impact of marketing on your bottom line. Mutinex's market mix modeling platform calibrates your insights against the latest market conditions so you can make media and marketing investment decisions confidently and quickly. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, your best decision starts here. To learn more about Mutinex, go to mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Okay, here's the rest of today's interview. A special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. Ready to take your team from I think to I know? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost-effective. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. So you've been doing this for a while, and it seems like you've cultivated some great relationships and leverage partnerships globally to help businesses grow. How have the marketing channels changed throughout your career, and what are some of the things that you've consistently leveraged, and what are some of the new marketing channels that you're excited about?
Well, clearly the biggest changes are just the channels themselves. When I first was doing this, I was on phone calls late at night in my office talking to people in Asia or getting in very early talking to people in Europe. And we were sending out white papers and essentially hard copy paper, if you will, when I'd start to speak in front of audiences in both continents and in Latin America later on. Obviously, that isn't really necessary today as we speak, because we do everything from video context to other types of virtual relationships and virtual communications between the two. So from my perspective and how I've worked with my clients most recently, we utilize all the various types of channels to be able to communicate and promote our capabilities or my clients' capabilities at this stage to be able to engage the market. But I will say that this may sound like an old perspective, but the reality is, to paraphrase Jacques Cousteau, il faut aller voir, which means we must go see for ourselves. And another hackneyed perspective that I've created, which is, if you want to know, you've got to go. And at some point, if you are really serious about being able to leverage and harvest opportunities cross-border, you got to be thinking about getting in front of your partner and your prospects and your customers as they build out. So you leverage all the tools you can in the quiver, but at the end of the day, you're still going to have to get on a plane. That's my bias.
It's funny because the world has gotten so big and we're all interconnected. And on the flip side, it feels like it's harder than ever to get in front of people because we're all so strapped to our computers. It's easier to hop on a Zoom. We're recording remotely right now. I honestly hardly ever leave my house. How do you feel about the shift in terms of remote work and the reliance on things like Zoom or our digital methods for communication? And why are they better or worse when you're building partnerships?
Well, I'll tell you a story. Very early on in this startup that I mentioned, in the time frame that we're talking about is around 2001 to about 2006, 2007. And again, this was a rank cockroach startup, as I used to characterize ourselves as, very early in the game. But we had enough revenue and we had enough seed funding to be able to undertake this kind of expansion globally in a very targeted, precise manner. I would go to Asia maybe once a month for about 3 months, and each time I was dropping into Singtel. Singtel is the largest telecommunications provider in Singapore, and Singapore is a massively large trader in terms of telephony services, messaging services, data services, because of the nature of its economy. In fact, a friend of mine who was the U.S. ambassador to Singapore, and he once told me that they were the sixth largest trading partner with the United States, which is phenomenal considering that it's a city-state of 6 million people. point is that after about the third meeting, I closed the deal with my counterpart who was a VP there. And as is my approach, I asked straight out as to, this is great news, but I want to know what convinced you to buy from us as opposed to some of our competitors, both regionally as well as internationally. And his answer was very straightforward. It's because you're here. Unlike your competitors, they're not here. They might be calling me late hours in the night, not understanding that there is a 12-hour time difference between the East Coast of the U.S. and Singapore, which I was aghast at. And then secondarily, it was like, you know, the reality, you may be a startup, but there's enough funds for you to be able to make this kind of initiative, or you're willing to make that type of bet. And I would rather be working with you than somebody who's not willing to come here, understand the cultural differences, how you might be able to provide us with a value proposition that's new to us, and how we might be able to work together in partnership going forward. That's my first answer. My second answer, if you will, to the question of the virtual aspects of it, another story. Around the same time frame as we started growing bigger and bigger, I reached out to some of my contacts in Hong Kong looking for a trip to go there and look for opportunities for expansion into mainland China. And here I was a week before I was supposed to be traveling, and I didn't have any confirmations of meetings yet. And then it got to the point where it was 3 days before I was supposed to be departing, and I didn't have any confirmations of meetings yet. Now, there's a cultural element to this, but I was really quite paranoid. If I had gone to my boss, who's the EVP of the company, the number two in the company, and said, hey, Mark, I don't have any meetings yet, he probably would have said, don't go. Well, I went. And I was confident that once I got there, because I had already been communicating with them, hey, when can we connect? In one case, it's like, yeah, well, when you get here, we'll make some arrangements for dinner or lunch, which is kind of amorphous. But the reality is that he knew that I was traveling 12 hours to get there from Washington, D.C. to Hong Kong. I didn't think he was going to say no. And by the time that I was done, I had every meeting booked out in my calendar that I expected and more. So it's not always the virtual elements that are going to be the most efficient and most effective. Yeah, it might be the most cost savings, but the reality is that, as I say, if you want to know, you got to go.
If you want to know, you got to go. We live in the digital world. We communicate over our phones, our devices. We're constantly using technology solutions to ease the burden of communication. But sometimes it's actually beneficial to put the device down, go to your consumers, shake a hand, have a lunch, have a dinner, maybe even a drink, and get to know the person you're working with. Sometimes that's what closes the deal. And that wraps up this episode of the MarTech Podcast. Thanks for listening to my conversation with Paul Rupert, the founder of Global Point View Limited. Join us again tomorrow when Paul and I are going to continue our conversation talking about insights on cross-border partnerships. If you can't wait till our next episode and you'd like to learn more about Paul, you can find a link to his LinkedIn profile in our show notes. You can contact him on Twitter, where his handle is Paul R. Rupert. That's PaulRupert. Or you can visit his website, which is gpvltd.com. Just one more link in our show notes I'd like to tell you about. If you didn't have a chance to take notes while you were listening to this podcast, head over to martechpod.com, where we have summaries of all of our episodes and contact information for our guests. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter, and you can even apply to be the next guest speaker on the MarTech Podcast. Of course, you can always reach out on social media. Our handle is MarTechPod, MarTechPod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Or you can contact me directly on LinkedIn. My handle is Ben J. Schaap, BenJSHAP. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want a stream of marketing and technology knowledge in your podcast feed, we're going to publish an episode every day this year. So hit the subscribe button in your podcast app and we'll be back in your feed tomorrow morning. All right, that's it for today. But until next time, my advice is to just focus on keeping your customers happy.
Thanks for listening to the MarTech Podcast, an I Hear Everything production. Looking to launch or scale a podcast like this one for your brand? Then visit iheareverything.com.